From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, a conversation with Brad Westwood, director of the Division of State History and the Utah State Historical Society, on Pioneer Day and on the importance of preserving the past.
Even if you've never been a Utahn or never a Mormon, you can still kind of get that joy and sense of what the state's all about through the celebration.
Also, Senator Mike Lee wants to shut down Obamacare. And speaking of Pioneer Day, we talked to some families who have lined up early to get their spot on the Days of 47 parade route.
We have come out at 4:30, 5:30, 6:30 in years past, and we really are the first ones on the street. And it's fun. I mean, it's what we do.
That and a local news summary just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. Thanks for tuning in to KCPW for The Rundown, a local news and information show where we look at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas. Later in the program, we feature a discussion with the State History Division's Brad Westwood about the significance of Pioneer Day. But right now, we begin with a summary of today's top local news stories. And first up, a Phoenix-based law firm will investigate the allegations of election law violations by Utah Attorney General John Swallow. Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell's office, which oversees elections, announced Tuesday that the law firm Snell & Wilmer had been selected to help investigate allegations that Swallow violated campaign laws by failing to disclose business interests. Bell's office says the law firm was one of 14 proposals by firms offering to serve as special counsel. The investigation is expected to take about 4 months. Swallow's personal attorneys argue that the complaint lacks merit. The attorney general has been surrounded by allegations of wrongdoing since shortly after he assumed office in January. He's the subject of a federal investigation and two complaints with the State Bar Association. Swallow denies any wrongdoing and says that the investigations will clear his name. The Affordable Care Act has been a thorn in the side of Republicans since it was passed in the first year of Obama's presidency. A group of Republicans, including Utah Senator Mike Lee, are threatening once more to defund the law to stop it from fully taking effect on January 1st. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has this story.
Utah Senator Mike Lee has been making the rounds on conservative radio and television shows, saying that he is part of an effort to shut down the government in October if money to implement the health care law known as the Affordable Care Act is included in a continuing resolution to keep the government funded. In an interview on Fox and Friends, he said there are currently 13 or 14 Republicans in the Senate that will vote with him, and he expects more to sign on this week.
If Republicans in both houses simply refuse to vote for any continuing resolution that contains further funding for further enforcement of Obamacare, we can stop it. We can stop the individual mandate from going into effect.
Lee says there is a parallel effort happening in the House. Jason Stevenson with the Utah Health Policy Project, a nonpartisan group advocating for health care for everyone, says the debate has gone on for many years now, and it's time to move on.
It's already been voted on. We've had an election about it, pretty much, and the Supreme Court has weighed in. So this is kind of unprecedented in terms of what he's trying to do over this law.
Republicans recently restarted their efforts to block the law after the Obama administration delayed a provision that would have required large employers to provide insurance or face a fine. Companies had complained that the reporting requirement was too long and complicated for them to comply in time. Lee and others say it's unfair for the employer mandate to be delayed, but not the individual mandate, which requires that everyone purchase insurance. In response, Stevenson says the individual mandate is a critical component of the law and one that keeps the cost of insurance lower for everyone.
There was a study that came out a year ago that said that anybody who has insurance is paying about $1,000 extra per family policy just to cover those uninsured folks. And, of course, the federal government, you know, pays a lot of money to hospitals to cover those folks as well, those that can't pay their bills. So by getting more people into coverage, more people will be able to pay their bills. They're not going to face financial bankruptcy or distress based on a medical emergency, and it's going to help the system be more sustainable. So, in fact, I think the individual mandate is going to bring premiums down.
Stevenson says the employer mandate is not as critical and that it was delayed until 2015 so that employers can better comply with the law.
Again, it's going to have a pretty small impact on the Affordable Care Act. It's just a couple percent of employers who are actually affected by that.
Lee says the goal is to also stop funding for the exchanges, which will be online marketplaces where individuals and companies can shop for insurance. Lee says blocking funding for further implementation of the law now will prevent increases in premiums and stop people from losing their current insurance. Stevenson disagrees and says if legislators were able to block funding for the exchanges, it would prevent an estimated 200,000 people in Utah from getting tax subsidies to make insurance affordable.
So these would be people who make between 100% of poverty and 400% of poverty, which is actually a big segment of our population. You know, for a family of four, that's up to, a family of four can make up to $92,000 a year and still qualify for these tax credits to help make insurance affordable on the Utah marketplace.
The health insurance exchanges are expected to be open for business on October 1st, and coverage will begin on January 1st of next year. One thing is clear, October promises to be an interesting month. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
A 27-year-old Arizona woman who was hiking a popular southern Utah trail with her husband has died after getting lost in the desert and succumbing to heat exposure. Kane County Emergency Services officials say Elizabeth Ann Burville of Mesa, Arizona, died Monday after hiking the Wave Trail. Deputies say Burville and her husband had won permits to hike the restricted area 7 months ago and took the trek to celebrate their fifth wedding anniversary. Officials say the couple lost the trail a few times on the way back, and Burville became fatigued. A helicopter was dispatched to the scene about 2 p.m., but officials say Burville was in cardiac arrest by the time rescuers arrived and died. The cause is under investigation. Deputies say the Burvilles have two sons, ages 4 and 5. Employees of Salt Lake City will now have access to a medical clinic that will provide high-quality health care at lower costs. Primary care physician Trevor Jacobson will take care of the 2,700 full-time employees and their families.
I'm proud to say that my views on health care are deeply rooted in my country childhood. I grew up in a small community where I had a small-town doctor. He knew me personally. He knew my family. Throughout the years, he grew to know my medical history. And he used all of that to help provide excellent care, primarily focused on prevention.
Jacobson says he will help patients focus on lifestyle changes, but will also work with outside providers when patients face healthcare situations that are beyond the clinic's capacity. Salt Lake City Councilman Carlton Christensen says the city was looking for ways to reduce healthcare costs.
The public expects the public sector to look for partnerships in addressing the rising costs of health care. A few years ago, as we evaluated our own self-funded insurance plan and were faced with some challenging actuarial balances, it was clear that we couldn't continue on the direction that we were going.
Christensen says the clinic, together with current insurance coverage, will help achieve that goal by having patients share in their own health care costs, as well as paying Jacobson as a salaried employee rather than being paid per service. The clinic is expected to reduce costs to the employees by 25%. The city of Provo is preparing to release details about its deal with Google Fiber to provide high-speed internet and television after nailing down the details this week. Mayor John Curtis says both parties signed a final contract on Monday. Curtis and Google Fiber announced the deal in April that will have Google Incorporated pay $1 to take over the city's nearly decade-old fiber-optic network that cost $39 million to build. Google selected Provo as the third city in the U.S. to receive the service. Curtis says details about the type of service Google is providing and how it will be rolled out will soon be released. And finally today, the Days of 47 parade kicks off tomorrow at 9 a.m., but spectators are already on the scene, lining up early for what amounts to a huge sleepover. For decades, one mother and daughter duo from West Valley City have come the night before to get a front row seat for the parade.
My name is Heidi Wiesman.
I'm her mother, Celeste Wiesman.
We're camping out for the Days of 47 parade, and I'm 23 years old, and this will be my 24th parade tomorrow morning. It's the best. You get a front row seat. You move your air mattress to the green line, and you can watch the parade in comfort.
It's the third largest parade in the country. It honors our pioneer heritage. We've come from pioneer stock, but you could be a pioneer as well in converting to the church and then having it be that you're the pioneer in your family to start the whole thing off.
A woman from Sandy named Sarah, who didn't give her last name, said that the sleepover was a long-standing tradition in her family.
We've done this over since I was a little girl.
Her favorite part of the urban camping experience?
Seeing all the crazies at night. We have a big group, so we're taken care of.
The Days of 47 parade commemorates the arrival of the Mormon pioneers into the Salt Lake Valley in 1847. Diane Duffin, another camper lined up along the parade route, talked about the significance of the event to herself and to her family.
Well, I had a grandmother that was pregnant and walked across the plains because she couldn't ride in the wagon because it was too hard on her. And at night, they'd have to dig her hole in the ground, and she would sit there, and they'd bury her legs in the dirt up to her knees so she could walk the next day because she couldn't stand the jarring of the wagon.
The parade starts at 9 a.m. at South Temple and State Street in downtown Salt Lake City and proceeds south down 200 East before heading up 900 South to Liberty Park. And that's today's local news summary. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. It's now time for the feature interview segment of our program. For today's interview, we invited Brad Westwood, director of the Utah Division of State History and the State Historical Society, to come in and talk to us about the origin of Pioneer Day and the importance of historic preservation. What was the first Pioneer Day like? Is there a record of it? Or, you know, how far back do Pioneer Days go?
You know, it's a great question because it's not an easy answer. The official legislation, or when it becomes official state holiday, is 1882. But you have celebrations pretty much since 47. And there's that hypersense of history that Mormons are so well known for. And so this idea that they've come to a new land, that they're starting this new enterprise, people were writing in their journals and their diaries, they would have big banquets and celebrations. But the 24th really evolved into a fairly big event not many years after. The one year that does strike an interest for me is 1857. The pioneers, everyone's up in Little Cottonwood Canyon. They're celebrating that 10th anniversary. They've made a big flyer or a broadside that they pass out everywhere, and it has a little cannon on it, and, you know, come to Little Cottonwood Canyon, let's have a big celebration. And it is then that there's official public news that Johnson's army is in Wyoming, that Utah or the territory of Deseret is somewhat under attack, and everyone is sort of brought to guard, and this whole idea of Johnson's army and the possibility of the U.S. Army coming into Utah really comes to the fore publicly, and it's during the holidays, during the 24th of July celebration. So it's really been going on a long time.
That's interesting, and this is the beginning of the so-called Utah War to a certain extent. This speaks a little bit to the conflicts between Mormons and the federal government, but also to a certain extent the persecution the Mormons had faced and the reason that they came to Utah in the first place.
Well, yes. You know, I'll tell you something that makes the 24th fascinating to me is it's just a few weeks after the 4th of July. And July, to me, is the push and pull of Utah and its politics and its sense of identity. You have everyone celebrating the Independence Day and our nation on the 4th, and of which we've always been big flag flying people here in Utah. We love our nation, and yet at the same time, we love our independence. And so on the 24th, we celebrate this sense that Utah is its own little state and has its own identity, but more importantly, that it started as a, at least so far as the European pioneers of 1847, as a distinctly separate place. And so this push and pull is always playing out in July, and I'm fascinated by it. And even newcomers to Utah will really kind of engage in this big celebratory thing.
You know, and we should talk a little bit about what the 24th of July actually commemorates, the arrival of the pioneers into the valley in 1847, beginning actually a couple of days earlier. I believe it's Brigham Young and his cohort who actually show up on the 24th.
That's right. They all arrive, and they're somewhere around Temple Square. And Brigham Young pretty much says, you know, okay, we're here. Before that, of course, they have the famous utterance, this is the place, you know, over the hill. But also a group of the church leaders go to what's called Ensign Peak. And I would tell any listener, if they have an opportunity, take that quarter-mile hike up on the north side of Salt Lake. You get an incredible panoramic view, and you get this sense of the Mormon pioneers really saw this as a place of gathering. But it, like you say, it's 47 when everyone assembles on Temple Square, and they say, okay, this is where we're gonna camp. This is where we're going to start our little territorial arrangement. And not very long after, they start doing the surveys, the engineering work. They start sorting out where the best land is. Crops are planted. And of course, just in the nick of time, because it's the 24th and you're 6-8 weeks into the growing season. You know, Mormons even today love the idea of the pioneers, and so much so that the LDS Church has purchased land and have arranged with various federal agencies and to do these little treks, these pioneer treks, where they try to reenact the handcart pioneers, and you know, they suffer hard for a day or two, but they kind of viscerally feel the experience of being a pioneer. This whole pioneer thing is just a constant. Each generation kind of recontextualizes and makes it new.
Yeah.
And you know, and one thing that crosses my mind over and over: you don't have to be a Latter-day Saint to appreciate this whole pioneer thing. I think when I was living in Philadelphia, there was the Quakers, and even though I think I only saw a few Quakers in all the time I was living there, they were alive and well in their memory, and their imprint was just inseparable to Pennsylvania. And I think the same is with the Latter-day Saints. People can enjoy this whole experience and feel, even if they're not a Mormon, they can get in and enjoy this grand 24th of July celebration.
Fantastic. And so I want to talk a little bit about why commemorations like this are important, and maybe about the preservation of history in general. What are we doing when we celebrate historical events like this? What is the point of it? Why is it important?
You know, celebrations are unique to just about every group, or I think it's just a part of human nature. What makes this holiday significant is, well, first of all, that the people who settled Utah, I mean, notwithstanding the Indians and the Spaniards and, you know, the whole Mexican experience, really the growth of Utah comes with the Mormons after 47. And so looking back and acknowledging who we are, I think there's a certain morals that come, these little stories that we tell. It tells us about who we are. I have to say the holidays, the 24th, did change through the years. For example, it was you know, celebrating kind of an independence in the territorial period of Utah. During the polygamy raids, when the federal government was bearing down on the Mormons and it was illegal to be a polygamist, they draped the streets and Temple Square in black during a period of time where they were sort of saying, you know, look at the tough things we're encountering. So it has changed. It becomes a kind of a political vehicle for whatever the feelings and attitudes of the time are. What I think is fascinating is that you go to just about any community in Utah, and that push and pull I described in the 4th and the 24th plays out. Some communities will do the 24th, some will do the 4th, but you can stop anywhere and really kind of understand those deep feelings about pioneers through particularly these smaller communities and their celebrations.
So while I've got you here, let's talk about the State Historical Society. What does the State Historical Society do?
Well, the State Historical Society is, I think, an incredible enterprise, because there are many other institutions. The LDS Church has its historical department. The Daughters of the Utah Pioneers has a museum. And by the way, everyone ought to go find their relic hall and go see a Daughters of the Utah Pioneers museum during this period of time. And there's universities that collect, but nowhere is there a place quite like the Historical Society, because it's the everyman's history. It's the place where pretty much no vested interests or narratives are being focused on. So we collect every community, every ethnicity. We try to understand the entire story of Utah, even contemporary history. And so we work very hard with many other repositories, historical ones, many other groups that are interested in history. But we try to be as accessible and as inclusive as we can with history. History is a wonderful pastime. We love it. It's one of the major interests on the web. It's what people love to read when they read novels. There's lots of history engaged. But when you collect and document history, you're able to memorialize people. You're able to correct the record on things. You're able to see how things unfold. We are used in developing public policy. Good historical research will oftentimes sort of lay out where we ought to go in the future. We also are engaged in historic preservation. We encourage communities to maintain their historic sites and buildings. There's economic development that we're engaged in. There is a great deal of interest in eco-historical tourism, where people want to go to these little communities, see how things would look in the 19th century.
Even
the 20th century. I mean, there's this big surge in mid-20th century modern architecture. And so the society assists communities in placing neighborhoods and buildings on the National Register for Historic Places. We also deal in archaeology and antiquities. We are the a unit that deals with making sure that when federal funds are used, that they don't harm cultural resources. We also have a library and the Historical Quarterly. So we really are trying to engage Utah's public in the vibrancy and the love of history.
Yeah, and we've been talking about Pioneer Day, but I could basically bring you in here on any day of the year, given the massive focus of the Utah Historical Society, and we could talk about any number of historical events and trends and threads. Maybe we should try that again.
Roger, any excuse will do to have a good time. And history has that quality about it. So love to do that. The library here in Library Square was a prominent part of Pioneer life. Just a block over, the City and County Building was a place where new immigrants would camp for a time. And there was years where brass bands would meet the pioneers. And, you know, there was a sense of accomplishment getting across the plains and through the mountains and arriving in Salt Lake City. That same joy and excitement about getting over a tough patch, overcoming something, traveling from afar, it's all played out on the 24th each year in Utah.
Wonderful. Well, it's something we can look forward to celebrating tomorrow. I appreciate your coming in here today, Director Westwood. When you first walked in, you mentioned that you have some events coming up.
That's right. September, we have our annual Utah History Conference. We have 2 days. We partner with the Fort Douglas Museum up near the U. We'll have a day there, a day at the Rio Grande. You know, what's wonderful about the State Historical Society is we're housed in the Rio Grande train station. It was one of those early gateways of which our little development around us has evolved. It's also a gateway for people who come to want to understand Utah's history. From Broadway, looking west, you see the neon sign and the arches. You know you're on your way to the State Historical Society.
Brad Westwood, thanks again for coming in and speaking with us today, and happy Pioneer Day.
My pleasure, Roger.
That was Brad Westwood, Director of the Utah Division of State History and the Utah State Historical Society. For more information about Utah history, including Pioneer Day, check out their website, history.utah.gov. You're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us today on The Rundown. Our show today was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow, the program will be taking a break for the state holiday, but tune in again on Thursday for the second in our monthly discussions with Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank. That's full time for the program today. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.